I want to talk tonight about the work of Joanna Macy. So, are you familiar with Joanna? Yeah, probably many of us are. So, Joanna Macy is 96 years old, and she is a towering giant as an eco-philosopher, a Buddhist scholar, a systems theorist. She's been a towering voice in movements for justice, peace, ecology, environmental education, and she developed what's widely known as the work that reconnects. That reconnects us to ourselves and each other and the natural world and inspires us to take really good care. And Joanna is in her last days, and if anybody is on her mailing list, you're probably getting a lot of email about how she's doing each day. And there's a Caring Bridge site. And it's really extraordinary to read the messages and to know of the millions of people whose lives she's touched and transformed, including me. And so I want to talk a little bit about what I've learned from her. And there's so much to say, and you know, we can only do a smidgen in a half an hour. But I really feel that it's important to honor our elders because they are in the end of their lives. And there's so much that we've received through their hearts and their generosity. And so this lineage that just keeps going, we need to talk about our elders' work and what they've given us, contemporary elders, especially, I think. So in the work that reconnects, there are three primary stories, Joanna says, that we live inside of. And the three are business as usual, the great unraveling, and the great turning. And you may be very familiar with this, so just let this come in, and it's, you know how Dhamma talks are. You hear the same thing in different ways at different times. But I really have been enjoying going back into what did Joanna teach? What is her legacy, and how has what she's done affected me and affected my own understanding of my place in the world? So business as usual, what she talks about with that is the defining assumption that there's little need to change the way we live, that economic growth is regarded as essential for prosperity, and the central plot is about getting ahead. So that probably sounds fairly familiar, that we live, many of us, in a culture that bases our worth on our productivity, and that more is better, and keep going and keep going and keep going, and that the primary object of one's life is economic prosperity. And my hunch is that because we are all here in this beautiful Dharma practice, we know that that is not true for many of us. I mean, economic prosperity and stability is important, and yet it isn't the whole thing that we base our lives on, I don't think. So that's business as usual. And this is what we've been doing for a really, really, really long time. And then the second story that she teaches in the work that reconnects is the great unraveling, which draws attention to the disasters that business as usual is taking us towards, as well as those that have already been brought about. And we can see this, right? I mean, we look at this great unraveling, we don't have to look too far in any one of our communities to see what's happening with climate, with food scarcity, with economic scarcity, et cetera, et cetera. And how violence is, it's everywhere. And how much of that is business as usual. Because for so long, there's been a level of greed and ill will and ignorance that has been operating in our fundamental systems. And what we're doing here is saying, I have the courage to look at this. And it can be really painful. And it can be much easier to say, I can't deal with this right now. And I think that many of us might feel that way. I can speak for myself, but there's only so much, well, certainly watching the news, reading about devastation, that I think, and it all depends on where is your capacity, where is one's own resiliency. But we do see this great unraveling. And the heartbreak, I mean, you know, just look at what happened on the 4th of July in Texas at the girls' camp. It's not just in this country, obviously. So, but what Joanna says is, all right, so we have business as usual. It has led to this great unraveling, but through awareness and compassion and courage and sticking to it, we can move into what she says is the great turning, where we wake up. We wake up and we say, I'm not going to do it that way anymore. The violence stops with me. That another way is possible. And she says that this involves the emergence of new and creative human responses, an epical transition from an industrial society committed to economic growth to a life-sustaining society committed to healing and the recovery of our world. And I think that's the third noble truth that says peace is possible. That there's an end to our suffering when we release wanton grasping. And we know all desire is not bad. Wholesome desire is not bad. But the grasping and the more and the more and the more is a problem, right? It is this problem. And there's a lot going on now in trying to go back to indigenous ways of being, indigenous knowledge that really supports how can we move from an industrial age that is bent on more, more, more to, wait a minute, there have been people on this planet that were sustained in a wholesome way, and what I mean by that in a way that wasn't degrading the earth, for thousands of years before the Industrial Revolution. And so we know that there have been these forces that have built up and built up that have created this great unraveling. And I think that one of the most fantastic powers of Dharma practice and mindfulness practice is that we can choose how we're going to be in relationship with our lives. And one time, sometimes in my beginning classes, when I teach foundations in mindfulness, I will say to people, okay, what's the definition of mindfulness? And you can't get it wrong. And this is really important because people say, oh my God, I can't answer that question, I might get it wrong. But if you know you can't get it wrong, every single answer is accurate. And so there are all these beautiful responses: presence of mind, peace, openness, curiosity, relaxation, all kinds of things, awareness. And then one person said, choice. And I thought that was really, really right on. Because if I have the capacity to pause, to see how is what I'm doing affecting myself and others, that's powerful right there. Just to pause and inquire. And then, you know, the Buddha gave us a very specific teaching when he said, when you don't know what to do, you can ask yourself, what when I do it will be for my welfare and the welfare of others? And go in that direction. And if it is not for both your own welfare and the welfare of others, don't do it. But it takes courage to ask that question, and it takes slowing down to ask that question, right? And we're so quick. We're so often on automatic. So this great turning is this amazing capacity to say, What, when I do it, is going to be for the welfare and happiness of myself and others? Because if it's all about my own economic growth, it's not going to be for the welfare and happiness of others. It can't be, if it's all about me all the time. So this takes a lot of undoing of our own self-referential ways of being, and it's scary, and it's hard, and it's lifelong. And I like to think that this great turning is going to be happening for a very long time. It's not just this year or this election cycle. And it's important to remember that. It's important to remember the long view, even though in the short run, things might feel really, really painful, and they are. And so how do we work with this great turning and live inside of the pain of the great unraveling? And this is where Joanna developed the work that reconnects. And that's what it's called. You can Google it. It's a huge organization, and it's trained many, many people all over the world. And so what she's developed is what's known as the Great Spiral. Anybody familiar with the spiral? Okay, so here's what it is. It's got four distinct parts. We begin with coming from gratitude. And that's why I offered you the gratitude meditation today. That what she says is we need to first start with our own goodness. What can we appreciate? How are we in relationship with, as Brother David Steindl-Rast says, the great fullness of heart? So that's the first place to start on this path. And then through the ground of gratitude and appreciation, we move into the phase of honoring our pain. And it's so brilliant because we do have pain. Every one of us experiences dukkha in different ways. And so that's the second piece, but we need the strength and the capacity that gratitude can give us in order to meet the dukkha, to honor what is painful. And then out of that, there's the work of seeing with new eyes. And seeing with new eyes, for me, the way I understand that is, how do we reframe a difficult situation? What else is true here? And you've probably all heard me, anybody who has sat with me and we've a number of times, you've heard me offer that question, that when things are tough, to ask oneself, what else is true? Now, this does not mean to dismiss what might be difficult, but there are so many things that are true all at the same time. So we can be going through a very tough time, or maybe not such a tough time. Maybe it's just a little irritating. But what else is going on that supports your capacity to meet difficulty? So seeing with new eyes. And then lastly, in this spiral, the fourth part is going forth. Meaning, okay, now take what you've learned, what you know, and take it out into your life. Take it out into your relationships. Take it out into your community. And each one of us is different. Not everybody is going to go to protests or start a nonprofit or do something that is really big, but it's also really big just to take it into your most intimate relationships with a commitment towards kindness and compassion and gentleness and gratitude. And so all of this can be happening at once. You can be anywhere on this spiral, and you can actually, I think we can train in coming from gratitude, and we understand that honoring pain, that pain is part and parcel to living a life. And so we honor it all the time. Let's not ever just say, my experience of difficulty doesn't matter. It matters. And a continual practice of seeing with new eyes, and what am I learning from this? How am I going to go forth? And in fact, it's a question I like to use that helps me, that, you know, in our Western psychological culture, I think there's a lot of emphasis on Where did my pain come from? Of getting to know who we are. What was my family like? What is the intergenerational trauma? Why am I the way I am? Or what were the things that happened to me in my young life that have informed my adult life? And all of those are really valuable, important questions. And at some point, you know the answers. Oh, this is what happened. This is what happened 2 generations ago or 5 generations ago that has been passed down in my family. I get what happened to me. But this practice has taught me another question, which is, okay, I get my past. But where is this suffering leading? And for me, that's the operative question. What have I learned? What have I learned, and where is this leading me? And for me, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if some of us here, if suffering brought you to practice, it brought me to practice. So what a wonderful place for suffering to lead, right? Where is this suffering leading? Into Sangha, into a deeper understanding of my heart. And then in the Metta Sutta, may all beings be at ease, including myself, omitting none. That was revolutionary, right? Including me. So all of these parts of the spiral can be happening at once. And there's so much mystery. There's so much we don't know. What does it mean to go forth, to see with new eyes? That takes some courage to step out and say, all right, let's see what happens next. And Joanna was loved the work of Rainer Maria Rilke, the poet. And she translated his poetry into a book called The Book of Hours. And one of her very favorite poems is called Widening Circles. And I want to read it to you. It goes like this. I live my life in widening circles that reach out across the world. I may not complete this last one, but I give myself to it. I circle around God, around the primordial tower. I've been circling for thousands of years, and I still don't know. Am I a falcon, a storm, or a great song? That's the willingness to just step out. I don't know, but we live our lives in widening circles of inquiry, of care, of meeting our own pain with others' pain, of compassion. One of my students wrote to me yesterday, and I hadn't seen this person for a few years, and they would come to Sangha regularly. And he wrote to me to tell me that 3 weeks ago, his daughter took her life. And did I have anything that could be helpful to him? You know, it's heartbreaking, and it took my breath away, and I spent all day yesterday thinking, what could I possibly say that could be helpful? And I decided to let go of that question, to let go of the fear that I might not say the right thing. And that the most important thing was to write back to him and say, my heart is broken with you. My heart is broken with you. This is what we do. We accompany each other. I don't know where he lives. I don't, you know, I mean, we see so many people in community, on Zoom. But we do have connections. And somebody writes and says, this is what happened. I don't know what to do. We don't have to know what to do. You know, we don't. But I think what this practice is teaching us is to show up. And Joanna said, I remember reading very clearly in her book, I think it's in Act of Hope. She said, it's not about whether you show up hopeful or hopeless. To show up. You're not required to be hopeful or hopeless. Just show up. And then I heard an interview that she did about a year ago, and somebody asked her, "What do we do now? The earth is in such distress. This great unraveling is real." And she said, and this is another question that I love. She said, "I don't know." She said, "I don't know what's going to happen with the earth, but I think what our job is now is to accompany her, is witness, be here." We don't have to know the answers. And I think one of the most brilliant answers any person can give another person when one person says to the other one, "What do I do? What do you think?" And when you don't know the answer, the best thing is to say, "I don't know, but I'm here with you." And I think this is what Joanna has taught us. I don't know, but I encourage you and implore you to show up. Be willing to honor your pain, to see it, to feel it, to know that you're in good community, and we start with gratitude. So, what is gratitude? Gratitude is this thankfulness, the great fullness of heart, an affirmation of goodness, a felt sense of wonder and appreciation. And I offered you in that meditation to bring to mind something that you could remember that you had that feeling of, "I'm glad that happened." Because it reminds not only your mind, it reminds the heart, it reminds the body of states of goodness and well-being. And I think we need that. I think we really need to remember what is good. What happened today that is good? I went for a hike this morning early. No, not early enough because it was got kind of hot, but early. And the wildflowers were everywhere. And it was such a pleasure to walk outside along a dry creek with big granite boulders and purple and yellow and white and pink and red and green, and just feel the gratitude of, "I have a body that works, that I can go for this walk, I can be here." And my heart was so sad for this student who wrote to me yesterday. But what else is true is I can still go out and do that. And I feel very blessed. And what I did say to him is, go outside, touch a tree, touch the earth, look up at the sky, notice the moon. Those things are still true. And I said, and if it doesn't work, don't do it. That's the other part, right? Is that, as we support one another, we don't really know what's right for another person. How could we possibly? But we can show up. We can show up and say, "My heart is broken with you." And that's, I think, mostly what we want. And the other thing that happens is we also, in times of celebration, say, "I'm cheering you on. My heart is bursting for you." Bursting with joy, as we do that too. Joanna said, "Gratitude is about delighting in and feeling satisfied with what you're already experiencing. Gratitude is about delighting in and feeling satisfied with what you are already experiencing." How often do we pause to savor what we're experiencing now? We're toppling forward all the time. What's the next big hit? What's the next thing on the to-do list? What if you had a day, I mean, maybe you already do, without a to-do list? And for some, that's a novel idea. Like if you didn't have to do anything, like literally an open-ended day to delight in that space. So gratitude is not a manufactured feeling at all. And sometimes it can feel that way. If you've ever been to a meal and somebody says, "All right, let's go around the table And everybody say what you're grateful for. That bugs me. I just say that really bugs me, because I think that it's asking in a moment that feeling might not be accessible, and it creates some vulnerability. It could be embarrassment. It could be bring out all kinds of things. So gratitude and appreciation are not manufactured. It comes from a deeper place. So, you know, if you wanted to do that exercise with the family or with at any table, you might rethink how to bring that up. Maybe it's saying, how about if everybody shares something that happened any time in your life that you're glad it happened? Do you see how that reframing works? Because it brings about feelings of gratitude. And the other thing that I think is really important about gratitude is that accessibility is different for everybody, which is what I'm getting to here. And in the teachings that Joanna says come from gratitude, well, we have to learn how to access it first. And one might think that feeling grateful is about something I have received, as opposed to maybe something I've experienced, or how appreciation can be outside of me. So people who might say, I don't feel grateful, and then they feel lousy for not feeling that, I mean, that's not what we want to do, is actually to take it outside of oneself. And it might be that I could appreciate all the myriad wildflowers. I didn't have to do anything to do that. I just walked on a path and I paid attention. So it isn't about that I got something that I feel gratitude. I mean, what I got was a really good feeling of beauty and being there. But you're following me? I'm not talking about the getting of stuff in that way at all. So to notice, how can one appreciate, be in appreciation for something outside of oneself? And I don't know what's happening in the neurobiological response of what causes feelings of well-being, but my guess is that gratitude and appreciation are on the same track, that it's a feeling of well-being that arises. And I don't know, we'd have to ask, you know, a neuroscientist about that, but I get a similar feeling of uplift with appreciation as I do gratitude. I just think they're the same thing. And one of the things that Richie Davidson, the neuroscientist, has discovered is that the ability to experience gratitude is one of three factors that have a greater influence on our increasing happiness. The other factors are the ability to reframe a situation, seeing with new eyes, and also kindness and generosity, making a choice to be kind, a choice towards generosity. So this gratitude practice is profound, and it goes on and on and on. We can look at it from many, many different perspectives, but I think that gratitude opens us up to love and to compassion and to joy, and even into forgiveness, because it is a point of connection. I think in the practices or the awareness of connection and belonging, gratitude arises. I mean, this evening when we started out and Linda was guiding us in the refuges, I had a lot of gratitude arise in me, because most of the sanghas that I sit with, we don't do that. And it felt good. I'm so glad we're doing that. And so it doesn't have to be a big, momentous thing. It was, you know, what was it? 2 minutes of chanting together that gave me that sense of connection and belonging. And Joanna says, gratitude feeds trust because it helps us acknowledge the times we've been able to count on one another. It feeds trust because we get to experience how we count on one another. I have so much more, but I'm going to end shortly. So years ago, before I moved to Colorado, my husband and I lived in a rural community north of Arcata in the Redwoods. And we lived on a country road that did not have a sidewalk or a shoulder on the road. And I used to walk a route all the time on this road. And I would walk my dog. And so I would walk always on the left-hand side of the road so the traffic was oncoming because I really wanted to be seen. And so I would have the dog and she would walk on my left side, and I started making a practice of waving to everybody. And I did it because I wanted them to see me, because I wanted to be safe. But what was happening is I would wave and I would get several different responses. One would be, "Who's that?" No, if they didn't know me, "Why is she waving?" The other one would be a tip of the head, or another one might be somebody's hand on the steering wheel and you get one finger. You ever seen the one finger wave? And then some people really wave, whether we knew each other or not. And I've noticed over many years of doing this all the time, how more and more people would wave before I had a chance to wave. And it became this whole thing in the neighborhood that people would started really waving to each other, whether they knew each other or not. What a practice of generosity, of seeing each other, of connecting. You're driving on the road, I'm walking on the road, there's very little room. I see you, I will not harm you. I actually want to say hello. That's another way to come from gratitude, to see with new eyes, to go forth. And I guess I'll end with this beautiful piece from Maya Angelou. She says, "Let gratitude be the pillow upon which you kneel to say your nightly prayers. Let gratitude be the pillow upon which you kneel to say your nightly prayers." So thank you for listening. Let's hold Joanna in our hearts, all those who are in her immediate circle, her daughter Peggy, who is posting regularly and taking such good care of her mama. Thank you for listening, everybody. And let's talk with each other. We have time. Anything you would like to bring in? Nancy, please. Can't hear you. Unmute, please.
I was just saying how much I appreciate your talk.
Oh, thank you.
And I want to go back to your student who had that horrible loss.
Yeah.
44 years ago, I lost an infant son.
Oh.
And I knew that nobody knew what to say to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I loved your thinking about it and reflecting and surmising that you just had to accompany him.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
That's exactly right. That's what I needed.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you just never know where life will lead you, because 6 years later, when I was more recovered from that loss, I wound up working at hospice for 16 years.
Wow.
And I accompanied many people, counseled many people.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I went on to get licensed and started a therapy practice, which at age 80, I'm still doing and enjoying.
That's fantastic, Nancy.
I've had a career I've really loved. I would still rather have had my son.
Yeah, of course you would.
Sometimes out of great sorrow comes something totally unexpected.
So that is the irony here, and the hard part, or maybe the paradox, or just something that is true, is that so often out of the depths of pain and sorrow, something happens that wouldn't have happened, something good happens that would not have happened otherwise. And it is so hard to say, thank you for that awful loss. It's really hard to say that. That's not what you're saying, because I'd rather have my son. Right? I mean, I'd rather have my son than all this other. But this is the thing about reframing, about seeing with new eyes. And it's not easy, because in the depths of the pain, that's pretty hard to see. Yeah.
But I have loved it. So thank you. Thanks,
Heidi.
Thank
you, Nancy. You're welcome. Who else? Michelle.
Hi, Heidi. First of all, I just loved the talk and I loved your story, the waving story. That was fantastic. I wanted to ask a question, not maybe directly related to the work of Joanna Macy, but you were talking about the space and choice to act, and you know, mentioned the Buddha's teaching of when you're deciding how to act wisely, what when I do is for the well-being of myself and others. And my question is, do the two always have to make a wise choice? Is it always the well-being of myself and others? Because what if the two are not compatible?
Yeah, so this is where I say, I don't know. Let's find out together. Because I think this is really tricky. And are we talking about all others? Are we talking about a few others? Are we talking about specific others? So I think the way I want to think about this, Michelle, is to twist it a little bit, to turn it, in that sometimes the choices that I make for myself might not be the best for somebody else, but I really hope they don't hurt that other person. And so I think we have to get nuanced and not be black and white about any of these things. Are the decisions that I'm making for myself, when they're supportive for me, that doesn't really mean they're harmful to somebody else. And so take a broad view on this. And I think it's a lifetime of a practice, of a teaching. Because it points to, how does greed and ill will and delusion, how are they functioning? How are they functioning inside of a relationship? Because all of us have threads of greed and ill will and delusion. We do. And this is a practice that helps us disentangle, but then they come back. So maybe don't take it literally, but really take it as a practice, but also with the intention not to cause harm. Is that helpful?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. Deborah.
I just say thank you.
You're welcome.
You're the third teacher I'm listening to today, and the miracle of synchronicity. You have all, it was Gabor Mate and Tara Brach and you. I have, you ask, what do I have great gratitude for? These are the blessings of my life, along with other things too, of course. And I, first of all, just want to thank you so deeply for the power of what you shared tonight.
You're welcome.
And for how much you incorporate yourself, you know, your own experience. It really hits at home. But even if you didn't do it, it really hits at home. So I just really wanted to express face-to-face on Zoom
my
gratitude.
Oh.
And thanking you. And again, just to share some joy about there's some in 12 steps and in other places, Dharma, there's sayings about when you need to hear something. I think a therapist friend of mine once said, if something comes at you three times, pay attention, Deborah. And so these three talks today, all different and yet not.
Well, isn't that the Dharma?
Yeah.
I mean, it's all different, yet not.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I know I'm talking too long, but what you just clarified with the last person's question was important for me too.
Oh, good.
Because sometimes I can't make you happy because it's healthy for me. It's not healthy.
That's right. And so this is so nuanced and so complicated, because then we get into the work of, well, where are my boundaries? What is saying no is saying yes. And there's so much here. And so I think it's a lifelong practice of understanding where are we in the spectrum of that. But also, for me, I have a commitment not to let ill will get stuck inside my heart. And I don't want to cause harm. And I really hope that when I make decisions that are supportive for me, that they're not harming anybody else. Yeah. And it's a big practice. Thank you.